Great. Hello, everyone. I think I'm the last thing standing between you and a glass of wine and dinner, so I'm going to try to not spend too much time. I am going to tell you about work that we've been doing from HyperSpringCan. This is the Subaru telescope. HSC is installed at the prime focus here. And we've been studying massive galaxies. These are incredibly low redshifts, so they're really gorgeous. We're going to slightly higher redshift, 0.3 to 0.5. And I'd like to emphasize Song's work. Basically, he's done all the work. And I think I have about 20 plots to show you. Of those 20, I made two, one was, which was stolen from Google Images. So Song is instrumental in this. I'm really a spokesperson for his work. So we're going to focus really on the high mass end, supermassive galaxies. These are things, our samples like above 11.6 and goes to 11.12. These are, you know, the giants. And the beauty of HSC is that we go both wide and deep. So because we go deep, we can look at the outskirts, really the profiles out to 100 kpc. But we also go wide, so we get samples of thousands of galaxies this massive, which is really fun. So I'm going to tell you about two things. The first one is going to be about comparing our data with hydro simulations and trying to convince you that that it would be nice to move beyond the mass function, and I'm going to explain what that means in a second. And then in the second part of this talk, I'm going to tell you about scatter and stellar to halo mass relation, which has been quite a theme I've noticed at this conference. So as we know, hydro simulations, as we've seen throughout the week, often tuned to certain observations, and the choice of those observations depends on which simulation you're considering. But most of them tend to tune to the galaxy mass function, and or might also tune to galaxy sizes. But in the context of the very high mass end, so this might be perfectly fine down here, but I'm talking more at the context of the high mass end. How robust is it to do this when we know that there are uncertainties in observational measurements of the stellar masses, depending on what radius you go to, and also the sizes, like the effective size, the R effective of a massive galaxy, has quite a lot of uncertainty. These things are not well fit by single source profiles, and if you're missing light, are we actually sure that we're comparing the same things? So this has been pointed out before. We're not the first people by any means to speak on this topic, but here's our example from HSC. So with HSC, because we go deep, we can measure this very high mass end very exquisitely. So we're trying to be very precise about what we're doing here at the very high mass end. And this is a plot from Song showing the difference in the high mass end of the mass function depending on the luminosity that you use for these massive galaxies. And you can see that you see shifts between the traditional C model that's been used in Sloan. This is 100 kpc mass, trying to enclose as much mass as we think we can, versus going extrapolating a little bit beyond and saying, well, if we extrapolate, what do we get? And so these are the kind of levels of differences that you see at the high mass end. So I think Song maybe already showed the slide, but this was just to try to convince you that better, deeper data is really gorgeous. This is what you get from a 2.5 meter and 8 meter. Yeah, it's beautiful. So we're particularly interested in looking at the outskirts here. So you can see by eye that we just, you see them. You can measure them out to 100 kpc. So I just want to ask, in terms of comparing the data with the hydro simulations, are we really comparing apples to apples? Because this is my Google image. Took me a long time to make this plot. Indeed, when we calibrate to the mass function, if we're considering the high mass end, are we using the same definitions? Are we doing 3D versus 2D, and are we using the same radii, and how well are we doing there? So our proposal and our philosophy with HSC is going to be the following, and I'm here to try to convince you that this is a good way to go, and if not, tell me later, we can argue about it. But our plan is that we will provide you with profiles for these galaxies instead of masses, and we will tell you when we think, to what limit we think our profiles become uncertain. And we are hoping that providing you with profiles, we can start to do comparisons with simulations in terms of the full galaxy profiles instead of just a mass. If you don't like to do profiles, we can also do aperture masses at different apertures. It's like a crude way of doing a profile. You could do two apertures, for example. And in addition, because HSC is a weak lensing survey, we can also provide you with the weak lensing profiles. And that will tell you about the dark matter halos around these galaxies. And so I'd like to convince people that instead of galaxy masses and sizes, we can now start to use galaxy profiles, and we can also compare with dark matter profiles. And Elisa was also moving in this direction in her talk this morning. I'd point out that there's some really nice things that we could do by moving in this direction. You know, this would sort of bypass all the complications of comparing with a stellar to halo mass relation in terms of, are you using the same halo mass diffusion? Are you using the same masses? If you just compare with these directly, the weak lensing gives you the dark matter. It doesn't matter what halo radius you're using, for example. So I think this would be more robust. So in this paper, we're going to provide these tabulated profiles as a function of R, where R will go to 100 kpc, and you can choose there. And these are our three mean profiles for these set of very massive galaxies. And it's been popular today to say that you've just submitted the paper. So ours is going to be submitted in plus 7 days, exactly. We will also provide you with a code where you can take your simulation and make a projected mass map. And this code will consistently compute the profile in the same way as the data. So it's maybe not super complicated, but we've got to agree on the ellipse, and we're taking the major axis and how you average the ellipticity. So we can provide a code so that we can do that consistently. So this is our attempt to move a bit in this direction. This is an example of an HSC galaxy where we've measured this 1D light profile along the major axis. All the neighboring things are masked out here. And this is a central galaxy from a simulation. I think this is from the Massive Black 2 simulation, where we're going to measure the 1D light profile in the same way as the data. And we've been working with several simulations, Bahamas, Massive Black 2 Horizon, and Illustrious is something in progress. One thing I will note, which people pointed out last week, and we are thinking about it, is that one could also do resolution tests in terms of understanding what the masking might be doing. So you could imagine making a mass map in the simulations and trying to understand if you mask out these peaks, how well do you recover what your original profile was, and so on and so forth. This is not something that we have done yet, so that is work in progress. So here are some preliminary results on comparing our profiles with some of these simulations. I'm showing you here the data are shown by the gray line. This is R, 100 kpc, and this is the mass surface density. Our data are this gray line here. This is one of our mass bins. I just picked a random mass bin. And this is the Horizon simulation. This is the Massive Black 2 simulation, and this is the Bahamas simulation. And, you know, to first order, things match up really well. It's pretty, globally, it's really not doing so bad. One thing we do seem to notice consistently between the simulations, which will be interesting to see if this is a general trend or just a coincidence, but we tend to find that all of the simulated profiles have more shallow inner parts and more puffy outskirts. You can see this in particular, for example, with the Massive Black 2 thing. They match very well here, and then they have these really puffy outskirts here. Here, it may be a little harder to see, but I'll show you in the cumulative profile, because there it becomes a lot more obvious in the cumulative sense. The other plot was a log plot, so it's a little hard to see. But here is our data cumulative distribution. These are matched by design, because you have to decide how you're going to compare these profiles. They're matched to have the same mass within 100 kpc. And you can see that the simulated profiles are more shallow, and then to have these more puffy outskirts. So that's interesting. I don't know if that's telling us something about the agent feedback in these models, or if it's some resolution effect in the simulations. And one of my goals here is to talk with the simulators to try to understand.
Yes. Is that one fluid harmonics, or how many fluid harmonics are you plotting?
How many? Say that again?
That PSF band is at one fluid half max?
Song?
Three times the
full width half max of the PSF. And there are plots of the we have plots of the profiles in the PSF, and this is sort of where it becomes quite negligible. But in terms of accumulative mass, like even if you don't trust the profile here, the cumulative mass, we can measure the amount of light, yeah, out to that radii. Perfect. Sorry? Well, scatter. So scatter is something that I'm very interested in because as opposed to stacking, we can measure each of these lines is a profile. So this is the scatter. So I would say globally the scatter is good, but sometimes like this simulation has more scatter. So, and I'll come back to scatter soon. Cumulative, right? Okay. So I also wanted to show a quick figure in terms of the impact of profile differences on the stellar mass function. So as I mentioned, simulations often calibrate to the mass function, but are we indeed comparing apples to apples? So some simulations tend to use like a 30 kpc radius enclosed mass to define their stellar mass. Here's a plot of these three simulations using a 30 kpc mass. This is actually a 2D mass measured in the same way as we measure in the data, compared to our mass function. Now, the goal here was not to say one simulation is calibrated better than another. So these are all just normalized to have the same value here. And you can see that, you know, looks pretty good because it's normalized. Now, we're going to step through different radii and see what happens. So if everything had exactly the same profile as you took larger apertures, the mass function would just shift and everything would look in agreement. So this is now going out to 50 kpc. And this is now going out to 100 kpc. And you see that, well, suddenly things don't look so well calibrated up here. And that's only because all of these simulations have these puffy outskirts that we don't seem to be seeing in the data. This is my message that I want to pass on here, is that matching masses and apertures doesn't guarantee that the total masses are matched if the shapes of the profiles are different. Thing that I took away from the workshop and that I'm interested in hearing from simulators, maybe in future simulations, we've heard that there's a lot of, I'm interested in the impact of baryonic physics on the matter distribution from a cosmological perspective, especially for things like cosmic shear. And we've heard that different simulations give a wide range of predictions for what that should be. But I'm interested in trying to understand, like, if the simulations matched both the mass profiles of galaxies as well as lensing, then how much dispersion would there actually be once those things were matched? With HSC, we can also give you lensing. So this is still a work in progress, but we have these beautiful lensing signals here. This is comparing with the massive black 2 simulation, where we fixed the galaxy mass, and we're saying, now let's compare the weak lensing. And the type of statement that you're going to be able to make by comparing the lensing and the galaxies is that you can say the massive black 2 simulation forms too much stellar mass in the outskirts at fixed halo mass. And so I'm hoping that those will make useful statements for simulators to then try to understand maybe how to calibrate their agent feedback. And these are early days for HSC. These errors will shrink. And we're going to also give you the weak lensing data. And I don't want simulators to think, oh, weak lensing is difficult, so I have to do a ray trace mark, because that's just not true. And if you have dark matter particles, which I'm pretty sure all simulators here have dark matter particles, then you can simply calculate delta sigma. And this is very nicely implemented in HaloTools. And you can download HaloTools, a couple of lines of code, and then you can predict compare with our observations. So moving on to the second thing that I wanted to talk about, this is scatter and stellar to halo mass. So we've heard that throughout this conference, a lot of people have been interested in scatter to halo mass. And I'd like to try to investigate the impact of missing light, so the fact that we're missing light at the outskirts, on the stellar to halo mass relation and also on its scatter. So here's a plot of halo mass versus stellar mass taken from the massive black 2 simulations. And as I said, we've made images of all these galaxies and remeasured the light in the same way as we would in the data. And we've done this for different apertures. So we've taken what Massive Black 2 calls its full 3D mass, all the light that it associates with the central galaxy. And then we've taken 100 kpc mass, and then we've taken a 10 kpc mass. And what you can see is that how much light you include has a tremendous impact on your inference about the amplitude of the stellar to halo mass relation. And that's not surprising, because as you lose more light, your stellar mass goes down. But this is interesting to consider in the context of looking at this as a function of redshift, because as you have more shallow surveys and miss more light, you could imagine, for example, creating fake evolution in this relationship. And also, the impact, if you have a shallow data set that doesn't capture this light, would induce a trend in the stellar to halo mass relation. Now, the scatter is also interesting to consider. So you can see this, the values for the scatter here. This is scatter in stellar mass at fixed halo mass. And you can see that this number increases as you use smaller and smaller apertures. So this is my only equation in this talk. More light equals less scatter. So the more light you can include when you measure your photometry, the less scatter you will have in your stellar to halo mass relation. And in this Massive Black 2 simulation at the high mass end, it goes down to 0.12 dex. And this becomes incredibly tight here because of the central limit theorem, and these massive galaxies are accreting a lot of smaller systems, and it's building up a lot of their outer light. And if you include that light, you get this tighter scatter here. So it's important to consider this accreted component. I completely agree with Annalisa on this point. And whether or not you include this is going to change your inference on this scatter. Yeah. Yes. This is from the Massive Black 2 simulation. And I'm going to go to the data in the next slide. Yeah, this is simulation, Simon, so it's real, right? sorry, yeah. No, yes. According to the simulations, this is what happens. I will just point out that in this set of simulations, you might be worried because there's a big difference between the total mass and the 100 kpc mass, and we've just told you in HSC that we only measure light out to 100 kpc. So I don't want you to go away worried by the fact that HSC is missing all this light. And here's why I don't want you to worry about it. And that is because when we compare our profiles with Massive Black 2, they have these really puffy outskirts. So this is why they get a lot more mass out here. In practice, in our data, we see very little mass when the extra plate out here. So we think 100 kpc is doing a good job in HSC data. So I wanted to point that out. So from these simulations, here's what we learned. We first learned that the stellar to halo mass relation depends on how much light you capture. And I think that's probably obvious to many people here, but I think it's interesting to quantify exactly how much it does. And this wasn't actually completely obvious to me until we looked at it, but the scatter does decrease from about 0.16 or something to about 0.12 as you include more light from the outskirts. So now I want to go back to HSC data and tackle similar questions, but using the data itself. And I want to try to understand, can we quantify the amount of scatter in the data introduced by this missing light component? And so these are my last two slides. So what Song has done here is very simple. Mm-hmm. We have assumed that our total mass perfectly correlates with halo mass. This is just for this experiment. So there's a perfect correlation between halo mass, and this is just some calibrated stellar to halo mass relation, and total mass. And so that is this line here. And then we have real galaxies. So for every point here, we can say we have the total mass. Let's just put down what the other mass is, where the other mass can be 100 kpc or 30 kpc or whatever it is. And then we can see how much extra scatter is introduced by the fact that these galaxies are not completely self-similar. And if you consider a total mass, there is scatter when you consider a mass within a smaller aperture. And so this is what you get. So if you go to 100 kpc, you introduce about 0.02 dex of scatter, and so maybe that's not so worrisome. But here is how the values change. If you go to 30 kpc, 50 kpc, and actually, it's not horrible until, you know, if you go to 10 kpc, you add 0.07 dex of scatter, but it's not terrible. So that's actually quite encouraging. That's nice that it doesn't add a whole lot of extra scatter. However, this is considering aperture masses, 100 kpc, 50 kpc, 30 kpc. This is the scary plot. This is what you get if you consider C-model magnitudes. Now, you're going to ask me about this, so I'm going to answer your question. We don't know if this applies to Sloan C-model magnitudes. This is for our HSC implementation of C-model, which has some issues. I don't want to go into detail. But when we use our C-model, which is still the same general philosophy as the Sloan fitting a de Vaucouleurs in the exponential, we get plus 0.1 dex of extra scatter, which is not getting very close to this famous 0.16 number that we've heard quoted around a lot. And this is how it gets. So you have your total mass, and then this is your stellar to halo mass relation with your C-model magnitude. And so we're fixing some of our issues in HSC to see if this, you know, so this might change. But globally, I think it's true that these massive galaxies are just not well described by sums of de Vaucouleurs and exponential. And so it's possible that you actually do better just by using a fixed aperture than you would by using C-model. We shall see. Certainly, this is true currently for HSC. And what's interesting is that there's a halo mass dependence to this because, as Song showed on Monday, massive galaxies have more puffy outskirts, so you will tend to miss more of those puffy outskirts. So if you consider galaxies in high mass halos, a lot of the scatter comes from missing light in the BCGs when you're using C-model. So this is just saying the same thing again, that if we consider our 100 kpc mass versus the difference of that with C-model, you see this big scatter that can be as big as 0.2 dex. And there's a halo mass dependence to this because you miss more light for these BCGs. So you have a bigger shift for BCGs than you do for non-BCGs, where BCG is a galaxy in a halo above 10 to the 14. So here's my summary. HSC is beautiful. We can trace galaxy profiles to 100 kpc. We're going to try to make your life easy and give you tabulated profiles and weak lensing, and we hope that will be useful for you. Song showed that these massive galaxies are really quite interesting, and I think there's much to be learned. They're definitely not self-similar. They have a lot of scatter in these outskirts. Song showed that there is an environmental dependence in the mass size relation, so we definitely see changes in these profiles as a function of halo mass at fixed either inner or total outer mass. Missing light can add scatter to the stellar to halo mass relation. We think that if you want to minimize the scatter, you'd actually be pretty well off just using a fixed aperture where the aperture is as large as you think you can go. And I'm very interested, and even more interested about this workshop, at what the intrinsic value in the scatter is and whether or not we've actually measured it. Is it 0.16 or maybe it's not 0.16? We shall see. And in terms of comparing with hydro simulations, we seem to be finding these trends that we are finding puffy outskirts. And we'd love to talk with simulators more about whether that's resolution effects, tidal disruption of subhalos, or something more interesting. Thank you very much.
Wow.
I thought you were all going to sleep.
Let's start over there.
Okay. Very nice. So I want to mention or ask about the weak lensing mass estimate. So what is the signal to noise sort of per galaxy, or how many stackings do you require to get a good estimate? I mean, this probably limits your scatter measurements in the future. So
does it limit our scatter?
So well, if you stack a lot of galaxies so and there's scatter in the halo mass, as you get an average.
This plot had nothing to do with weak lensing.
Yes.
So, yeah, okay, good.
It's about the measure of the inference.
So you can get a decent signal. I don't know the signal to noise, just by, if I remember my plots, by stacking tens of 20 massive galaxies. The signals I showed, I stacked a lot more, so they look great. But in principle, you could do finer bins. And saw and Alessandro Sonnenfeld, who's somewhere, has been thinking about some cool ideas about trying to do lens, very, very noisy lensing on individual systems and how you might use individual systems with noisy measurements, which I think is a fun idea.
Okay, well, I've got the mic. Rachel, fine. So, I mean, you're arguing that the large-scale measurement is more tightly related to the halo mass than the small-scale measurement.
Yes.
And that was because that seems to be the case in the massive black simulation.
Yes.
We don't know for sure if that's the case in the observations, right?
That's right.
You could have clearly made the 10 kiloparsec mass be the one with the perfect correlation, and the scatter would have been in the large one.
Yes.
So we know that at least for the more massive systems, you can define a richness for the surrounding object.
Yeah.
Which has a scatter of order 0.1 dex in the units you're talking, which is quite small.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you could try and resolve this directly rather than using the lensing by just using the richness of the surrounding clusters for these objects.
These are all questions that we are super interested in and working on, and I think that's a great suggestion. And I think above that, we can also look at correlations between the outskirts and the number of red things and what the lensing is telling us. So yeah, work in progress.
So you talked about stellar masses in many different apertures, and you didn't say how one accounts for the fact that the stellar populations may be changing significantly. So mass-to-light ratios may be changing significantly over this distance, especially if you have, you know, accreted satellites with lower metallicity, blah, blah, blah. So how do you handle that?
For now, we have ignored that. So we don't have variations in mass-to-light ratio. But Song has looked in great detail at color gradients across these galaxies, and the color gradients are fairly shallow. Mm-hmm. And one thing that we were concerned about for his environmental dependence of the mass-size relation was whether or not you might get a wrong answer because of different color gradients between galaxies and high-mass and low-mass halos. When we make that plot, galaxies and high-mass halos and galaxies and low-mass halos have very similar color gradients. So we don't think it's an issue for that result, but we have not done more on that topic.
Let me just encourage you, and this goes back to some of the discussions we were having earlier, to please, please, please publish your luminosity-based analyses. Don't just go straight to stellar mass. I know it's sexier, but please show us the luminosities.
Well, so a lot of these data are also now public, so that we can, yeah. Yeah. It's reduced data.
Yeah, hi.
Yes.
This is great work. Just a quick question. One thing you could do in the simulations, and what I think would be interesting to know, is if you take, you can go to one of the same galaxy in the simulations and look at it from different projections and get an idea what is the scatter in the mass inside a fixed aperture from just projection effects. And I bet that must be of that order already.
So we were thinking about this 3 days ago. Yeah, exactly. I think that's an excellent thing to ask.
I have a question, because you confused me about one thing, but just one comment.
Yeah.
I like your optimism and your confidence in the simulations, because this regime, I mean, it's hard enough to get the masses right, the stellar masses. This regime is particularly complicated because the luminosity profiles that you showed are determined by everything that can happen. Mm-hmm. The AGN plays a key role, but also in this very extreme mass event, merges play a role, and then you've got to get the right gas fractions in the fragments that are merging. So I think this is a really hard thing. So I don't see in the current generation of the next one of simulations trying to calibrate the subgrid physics by trying to match the profiles. I mean, it's hard enough just getting the right number. I mean, like, for example, the massive black
has
a massive disagreement.
Did I convince you that if you don't get the profiles right, then it doesn't, you also don't match the mass function? So are you going to compare to Lee and White?
No, well, so you need to then say, all right, we're going to measure the masses within something, and then just agree
on that. So we will give you the profiles and aperture masses, so you can choose.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's right. So I agree with that. But anyway, let me ask you a question. So let me ask my question. So my question, you confused me about the lensing, because
yes.
It's not clear to me how the lensing helps, because the lensing, it only gives you information out to 100 kiloparsecs and beyond, maybe a few tens of kiloparsecs. And there, the amount of light or the, you know, the variance aren't really that important. So why is the lensing going to help?
The lensing will help because it's telling you what the halo masses are. So for example, if I look at a simulation, let's if we look at one of these profiles and say, okay, at fixed galaxy mass, I'm finding that this simulation has too much light at the outskirts. Don't you think it would be more useful to know that this is also at fixed halo mass? So that you know at fixed halo mass, your galaxies are accreting too much. I think the halo mass is really useful here. Because
sure,
the lensing tells you what the halo mass
right,
is.
I thought you were talking about the profile from lensing, which doesn't really
I was just talking about, more. I was thinking about more in just sort of a halo mass terms. I mean, at some point, the lensing will also have information about the shape of the profile. But to first order, I think the halo mass is a useful thing.
Okay, so just for halo mass.
Then I was mainly just thinking that it tells you that these things have more mass in the outskirts at fixed halo mass, which I think is extra dimension.
Yeah, okay.
Alexei, Andrei Kravtsov here, and my comment is that there is an interesting comparison made in Martizzi's paper, Martizzi et al. 2015, where they compared a suite of simulations of zoom-in simulations of galaxy clusters and the BCGs that they formed there to the results that we obtained in 2014 for 9 BCGs in nearby clusters. So Sloan is shallow, but for nearby clusters, it actually can be used, the Sloan data can be used to trace BCG light to 200, sometimes even 300 kiloparsecs.
Yeah.
And they saw a remarkable agreement between the model and simulation.
Between the simulation? Yeah,
the
so
model.
This is probably a simulation dependent thing. These simulations probably don't have the same resolution as the simulation.
So it would be interesting to actually compare those observed profiles to yours.
Yeah.
I can send them to you.
Yeah,
and I also, in that study, we used those BCGs to measure the scatter.
Yeah.
And using the X-ray determined masses. And we got scatter of 0.16 on the cluster scale. So roughly what you get for Bayesian methods.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that kind of detailed work is really great, and I just want to say that the power of HSE is really just going to the numbers. So you have lots of numbers, the scatter, you can measure that really well. So it's and plus the weak lensing. So yeah, that doesn't mean that one shouldn't also do these smaller studies. Hello,
Josh. So going back to the question of stellar mass versus luminosities, so there is some evidence that at the fixed stellar mass, the mass-to-light ratio, halo mass to the light ratio, differs between blue and red galaxies, which suggests then that there could be color combinations which would have lower scatter than the stellar mass.
Mm-hmm.
Has anybody looked at that?
Like if you, at fixed stellar mass, you were to try to combine your blue and red to get a better halo estimator?
Yeah, we know that stellar mass is not the best because between blue and red, there's a factor of, I think, a factor of 2 in difference in the, in the stellar mass to the halo mass ratio.
Yeah, I agree. I think that would be interesting to do. We have not looked at that, and the regime that I'm talking about is really basically all giant red ellipticals. So there are no blue galaxies at 11.6 that are redshifts, really. But yeah, I agree with that.
I'm a little bit confused about this. So this question is really aimed at trying to understand a little bit more clearly what you've done.
Hmm.
If what you care about is the stellar mass halo mass relation, then the method you use to measure the amount of light in a galaxy will affect that in a systematic way.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a small aperture, you'll only get part of the light, part of the mass, bigger, and so forth. So that will lead to a systematic offset and so on. On the other hand, if you have several methods for determining the amount of light in a galaxy, and they all correlate perfectly with each other, then that will have no effect on the abundance matching because it won't change any of the ranks of the masses. And so it seems to me that for the case of abundance matching, the only thing that matters is whether two methods of measuring the light scramble the ranks of the galaxies, and that you ought to be able to determine that from a plot of the luminosity determined by one method versus the luminosity determined by the other method. And I don't remember whether you showed something like that.
So I think you're asking, do these different apertures change your stellar Taylor mass if you do abundance matching?
And that's not what I'm asking.
Sorry.
I'm asking if you plot the mass measured by one method, which say the 10 KPC method versus the other KPC, the 100 KPC method, I wonder what that plot looks like, because if that plot had very little, that plot in principle could have no scatter in it, in which case there would be no effect on the abundance
matching.
This is
this plot. This is this plot. This is exactly that plot.
And I don't understand what the abscissa is on that diagram.
This is halo mass. This is doing basically populating a stellar to halo mass relation, and then saying there's halo mass and galaxy mass. And fixed galaxy mass, 11.6. This is the total mass. This is the population of galaxies when you consider a 30 KPC aperture.
Okay, but this, I'm sorry, I still don't understand. You ought to be able to determine how much the ranking of galaxies is scrambled without ever introducing a dark matter halo.
But it's not just the ranking, because when you do abundance matching, maybe you don't change the ranking, but you still report a stellar to halo mass relation, and the point is that...
But it doesn't matter if you care about some other property of galaxies.
Oh. It's not related to halo mass. It's just the profile. Whether the profile is normalization.
Let me come back to this plot.
Since you're already running into research, maybe we can take some details of this discussion.
Okay.
I want to raise...
Let me just say there's a halo mass dependence, so it does change the ranking, because you miss more light. If you use C model in HSC, you lose more light for BCG, so it does change the ranking in a halo mass dependent.
Okay, well, let's take the chair's advice.
I want to raise, I think, an important question that you may have thought of. When Song Wang showed us those gorgeous HSC images, one of the things that was obvious, and that he pointed out, I think, was that the larger mass galaxies, the larger radius galaxies, were also usually more elongated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what you expect.
Yeah.
It's also true for dark matter halos. And that raises an important issue. Namely, you're using circular apertures.
No, we're not. We're using elliptical apertures along the ellipse of the galaxy and reported values along the major axis.
Good.
However, we don't use varying, the ellipticity might vary. We use a single constant. So this is also why we want to provide a code to people to do this consistently to make sure that we agree on those kind
good.
Of things.
And then there's another issue that automatically comes up as soon as you realize that these things tend to be, in reality, elongated. And that is that there's a projection effect.
Yes.
Namely, if they look round, you're probably seeing them down the long axis.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to change your masses.
Mm-hmm.
So the more data that you make publicly available so that people who want to model this can reproduce it and take into account those effects, the better it'll be.
Yeah.
Not only does the shape of dark matter halo profiles change as a function of radius, but their orientation also changes.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be that surprised.